Okay, so let's see. So first of all, are there any questions about the homework assignment or anything related to the class logistics? Yes, question. Yeah.
Supposing you have a weird pattern, which is like huge pattern of various periods, is that a
pattern? To have a huge pattern.
To have a pattern, and that's getting repeated. I mean, the pattern can be more like three characters, and three characters,
okay. No, the question I'm asking is a homework. On the homework, there was a question about generating what is the expected length of a random sequence. If they give you a random sequence, what is the expected length of, let's say, the longest repeat in it? Okay, and I'm assuming that your sequence is generated basically, you're flipping a coin at every base to decide what the character at that base is. And then I want to know what properties do such strings have. We agree DNA is not completely random, okay, but it's easier to analyze this than something else.
Last question. I do
want
to find out that the combinations of all the particular all the particular strings are normally
right.
If there's all that common such strings, suppose you've got a string like AB, which is a zero,
okay, so the on the last problem I asked you is an algorithmic problem where I ask you, given a profile, a sort of distribution of characters in the string, ask yourself to find all strings that in the sequence that are consistent with that profile. And you're given there the counts of each character, okay? I will claim each profile can exactly occur at only one position in the string, starting at one position in the string. And so that says that there's at most a linear number of ways it can occur. So your goal and job, if you want to think of it, is to identify the positions where that character can where that string can occur, okay? The number of outputs from that, I claim, if you count as your output, there's a starting position in the text string. Okay, they can be at most as many starting positions of interest as there are characters in the text string.
Yeah, but
I want that in the length of the input string. Okay, not the size of my pattern. If I had a mistake there, if you have that, you have to process this, the pattern, to hold the pattern and the string as well. Order N, not order M. Okay, sorry about that. If you send me mail, I may even make a change to that. Okay, question?
This is part one. Question one. Which member is the designated life scientist now?
Right. Okay, so the first question was on the homework. I insist that the homework be done in teams consisting of life scientists and non-life scientists. Okay? How many people already have their life science partner and are safely tucked away in groups? Okay, a small number. How many people do not have any life scientists? Okay? I see a bunch of people. How many life scientists do not have another partner? Okay, let's first have the life scientists stand up. So all the unmatched life scientists who would like to work on projects, I want you to stand up. Stand up, no, stand up and stay standing up, okay? So you guys can try to mate with them. Any other questions, okay? So I encourage you to try hard to try to find them. There are two of them standing up. Okay, there's some other people who, I would permit people to be in a group of two computer scientists to one life science student, to one life science student. How many of the groups that have already made it have one CS person and one life science? Are there any groups of one CS person and one life science that exist so far? Okay. So we're claiming a shortage of life scientists. Let's say at the moment I encourage you to look harder, okay, and we'll raise this question again on Thursday, Okay, any questions? So try to figure out, are there any CS people who could possibly define themselves as life scientists? Yes? Bio degree means you're a life scientist. It's a life scientist, okay? A bio major, a biomedical engineering, something which has some life to it. A chemistry, or something like that, counts as a life scientist, okay? But, so, if that's not good enough, someone who's taking the equivalent of three or more courses in the life sciences would count. Okay? So try to match yourselves up, and we'll discuss it next time. Any questions? Okay? Good. Okay, any other questions about what we've been doing or about the subject? Okay, as of last class, today will hopefully be the last lecture we'll give on sequence assembly. What is the situation so far? So far we have gotten to the point where we know that we can sequence small fragments, and the big computational problem in sequence assembly is to put the fragments together. Namely, given several million short reads, figure out, and the critical time critical issue here is given several million short fragments of 500 in length, figure out which fragments overlap each other. That's sort of the first and most critical part of sequence assembly. And last class we talked about a data structure called a suffix tree, which is the start of a data structure that will help us figure out overlaps quickly. Suffix trees are amazing data structures for sort of doing pattern matching type operations on strings. Again, DuraView, it's a tree built on all suffixes of a given string. A string of length n has n different suffixes, namely from every position on. A tree is a tree which basically has a path from root to leaf for every string that's inserted in the tree. So in this particular, in a suffix tree, there will be n leaves, one for every suffix of the original string. The path from root to leaf describes the string uniquely. Okay? And there will be a branching point in this tree. Whenever there are two suffixes that differ, that are similar in the prefix and differ at that point. Okay? So what was it? Any questions about a suffix tree? This is what we talked about last class, what they are, okay? What is amazing about suffix trees? The most amazing thing is that it will only take order n space to store a suffix tree of size n. You've got n leaves, because there's going to be internal nodes only at branches, you have at most n internal nodes. Therefore, you have at most 2n edges. The labels on the edges represent strings, but by describing those strings by their starting point and ending point in one copy of the string, we can store all the information we need as one copy of the string, n leaves, n internal nodes, 2n edges, and 2n sets of indexes, left starting and ending point, to describe the strings in the index. The string at each node. Okay? So we're not using that much space to store a suffix tree. Okay? It's fairly linear in the size of the tree. Any questions? This is kind of amazing. Even more amazing is that there are magical algorithms that I'm not going to talk about that can build this tree in linear time. Okay? So essentially, time as fast as big as a string, in that many steps, or some constant times that many steps, you can build this suffix tree. So it's quite practical to build it. The obvious naive algorithm would be one by one to insert suffixes. That would take n squared time in the worst case. But there's a magical algorithms that are complicated but implementable that I won't discuss that can do this in linear time. So from now on, we're magically going to assume we can get the suffix tree in linear time. Any questions? Okay? But what can you do with a suffix tree? Suffix trees are amazing things. So what can you do with them? Okay, this slide's a little bit, we can copy so well. But, well, let's say we wanted to solve the following problem. I give you as input two strings. Okay, S1 and S2. And I want to find the longest contiguous substrate of both of them. Name the longest string that appears in both of them. Okay, so if my input strings were livestock and sea liver, okay, L-I-V-E appears in both strings in order. Okay, there's no gaps allowed. Okay, now, can someone give me let's say one string is of length N and one string is of length M. Let's say they're both of length N, just to simplify it. Can someone give me a simple N squared algorithm to find the longest string in both of them?
Start from the left
of one of maybe the one of the strings. Put the other string, if you wish, underneath it. Do a character by character comparison, and sort of keep a count of how many matches you have so far. Okay, maybe start from the match. Okay, that matches. I now have one match, two match, three matches. Oops, it disagrees. Now we'll start our count at zero again. One match, two match. Okay, take the largest number I see. Okay, over all possible alignments, that will be the longest possible match. Does everybody sort of agree with the N squared algorithm? Okay, so that can be done in N squared die naively to find the longest common subsequence. In 1970, Knuth, who was one of the most famous algorithm gods, conjectured that there was no such linear algorithm possible for this problem. This problem was too hard, you couldn't do it in linear time. But he made the mistake of speaking a few years before suffix trees were invented. Okay? Using a suffix tree, can someone find a linear time algorithm to solve this problem, of finding the longest common substring in both of them? Okay? Any ideas? Okay? The basic idea is we have to build a suffix tree. That's going to be the magic word when you want to find a fast string algorithm. Your first words to say to make it sound like you know what you're talking about is say, build a suffix tree. Okay? So build a suffix tree, but a suffix tree of what? Okay, we've talked about suffix trees of one string. Here are two strings. Well, let's put the strings together by putting the first string, some weird character that doesn't exist anywhere, followed else in the strings, followed by the second string. Now we have a string whose length is proportional to the sum of the lengths of the input strings, right? Now let's build a suffix string. Okay? What is going to be the property of the suffix string? All suffixes are going to be in there. Any common string, any string that occurs more than once in that string, okay, any substring that occurs more than once in that string are going to have two suffixes that begin with the same thing, right? They will share a prefix. Okay? So there is going to be a path in that suffix tree which shares what it's been doing. And here's a little picture of our suffix tree, remember. The reason in this string we know that there's two places where X, Y, Z occurs is because there is a tree rooted in X, Y, Z, a subtree that has two leaves. So what do? We build the suffix tree, okay? And now we have to analyze the suffix tree to find out where is the longest such the node that is the longest, represents the longest prefix with two children, at least two children, but namely two children, one child of which is a suffix from the beginning part of the string, and one child of which is a suffix of the second part of the string. Okay? But that's not so hard to do by annotating our suffix string. We could label every leaf. Every leaf, remember, corresponds to a suffix of the string. Based on the length of the suffix, okay, we'll know whether or not it represents a suffix of the first part of the tree, the first substring or the second substring. Okay? We're now going to, propagate these labels up. So for every node, internal node, its label will be the union of all the descendants, the labels of its descendants. So every node is going to be, says, yes, I have a child who's from the first half, yes, I have a child from the second half, or whether I have no such children, one or both of them. Okay? Once I have that, a simple traversal of my tree will suffice to find the deepest such node, the one that represents the longest such prefix with the property that both that I have children from the first part and the second part. Okay? And I claim that will magically give me the longest common string of both strings. Any questions? Have people sort of understood that? Have people did not understand that? Okay, a few people up there are brave. So that's good. Let's go and I'm glad that people admit that. Okay, so let's take a look and see if we can do it by example. Suppose we took a look at the toughest string of a very simple string. Let's say it's A, T, C, and B, C, D. Okay, you want to find the shortest common string of these two strings. I'm saying build the suffix string A, B, C, pound, B, C, D. Build the suffix string of this thing. What the most interesting branch, the one that's going to correspond to the common substring, is going to have you know that the branch that begins B, C, and then splits. This is going to split to pound, B, C, D. This is going to split to D and the string. Okay? We can build the rest of the suffix string. We can build the whole suffix string. Every leaf now is going to represent a suffix of the string, right? We can identify with every leaf, okay, ask ourselves, is this leaf from the beginning or the end of the string? Basically, before or after the pound sign, the separator. The string goes on into the second string. We want to know if it is exclusively from the second string, or does it have some from, stuff from the beginning? Yeah.
Is there
one string? Okay, it turns out the question is, do I have to convert the two strings into one string, or can I just insert them into the tray without that? And the answer is you can do it either way. Okay? Right now, all I've asked you so far to trust me is that I can build the suffix tree of one string. Asking me to build the suffix tree efficiently of multiple strings requires a little bit more of disbelief. Okay, so that's why I'm concatenating them. But in fact, you can build one suffix tree efficiently with all the pieces you want in it. Okay? So this leaf starts in the first part, this is label 1. This node begins in the second part, and it's label 2. Okay? And this node, this internal node, is going to be labeled 1, 2 because it has two children. So these, there's no branch off over here. The string C, okay, occurs in both strings, both places also. So it's going to have two descendants, one of which is the first and one of which is the second. Okay, this might, my example is to duplicate, there's going to be some nodes in my tree which will have multiple descendants, but they may all exist in the second part of the string. Okay? Let's say my second string was not BCD, but BCXXX. Okay? The node labeled X is going to have three descendants. Okay? But they're all going to be from the second half of the string, and it doesn't interest me. Okay? So what is it that I want? I'm now going to walk through the string. I can figure out, as I do my traversal of the tree, okay, I will know how many characters deep in the tree am I by simply adding up the length of the label as I walk by. As I propagate backwards, I will know I can accumulate every node, the identities of whether I'm in the first half descendant, second half descendant, or both. The node that I want after walking over the whole tree is the deepest node which has both children. There's only n nodes in the tree. I can do this whole walking in order n time. Okay, and that will give me the best, the right answer. Yes? Well, C in this case could have two descendants. If I agree with A, B, C, B, C, D, but it's going to have two descendants. C, pound,
B, C, D. And C, D, pound, dollar sign, the interest rate. Okay. My handwriting is critical, that's it. Thank God for anything that's on this board. Okay? So, that's the question.
So let's look at the example here, perhaps. Maybe let's look at a real Suffolk Street here to make sure.
This is the dollar sign. This is the root. This is the root. It's not part of the string. This is the node out of the root that points to the substrate that has an edge label C on it. Okay?
So equivalently, if we take a look at the tree here, which is maybe easier to see. Let's say that I want to know whether I'll say a node is in the first, a leaf is in the first half. If it represents a, it starts at either the first X Y Z, and it's in the second half if it starts with the one of the second X Y Z's. This is going to be in the first half, second half. This node is going to be in both. This node's going to be in both. First half, second half. This node's in both. Okay. And by propagating up those labels, I'm going to be interested in the deepest such repeated spray. For this particular case, this node here is three characters deep. It's got a left, a first half child, and a second half child. Therefore, this would be the node that I'm interested in. Any questions? Okay. So basically, the algorithms that we're going to use are basically going to be in the form, build a Suffolk tree, stick some extra information at the nodes, walk up and down the tree, know we can walk all over the tree in linear time, okay, and we're done. Any questions? Okay. How do you know how deep each leaf is? Well, you can figure the depth of a leaf. Okay, if you took an elementary programming course, in many elementary programming courses, there is the problem of traversing a tree to record and compute what is the depth in terms of the number of nodes deep each leaf is. Okay? Okay, so by doing that kind of a traversal, you can record the physical depth and the number of edges deep each node is. But that's not what you're asking. You're asking how many characters deep is it each node. Well, as we walk over an edge, we know how many characters we've walked over. Why? Because we know the starting and ending index. Okay, in the string, the difference between them plus one is the number of characters we walked over. So in the same way, we can keep track of how many characters deep is each node. Okay, and you can either annotate the node with it or compute it on the fly as you need it. Any questions? Okay. Don't be shy. Okay, how many people now sort of understand the algorithm? Okay, how many people don't understand the algorithm? Okay. Any questions? Okay. So this is neat. We can now find the longest common substring of two strings and find linear in the size of the strings. Let's look at another example of the power of Suffolk trees.
Okay. Let's say we want to find palindromes. Okay?
A palindrome is a string which reads the same forwards as backwards. Okay? My favorite palindromes are a man, a plan, a canal, Panama. Okay? Or madam, I'm Adam. If you take those characters, delete the punctuation and spaces. But you take those characters, write them in reverse order, you get the same string as you had before.
Okay, that's something called the palindrome, and it's a cute thing if you like studying text. Some people get excited about such things. Okay?
But biologists actually get excited about something they call palindromic sequences,
which is a little bit different than the palindromes that we see here. Okay?
So, in DNA sequence analysis, we say that a palindrome is a sequence that is equal to its reverse complement. Okay? So, for example, the sequence GAATTC.
GAATTC. We write that in reverse. What do we get? CTTAAG. Okay? And if we now write the complement of it, C goes to GAAG.
TTC. Okay? So a spring is a palindrome biologically if it's a reverse complement of itself. Okay? Any questions? Why might such things be possibly of interest to a biologist? Okay? Is there any kind of biological property that would be interesting if you had a spring that was a reverse complement of itself?
It could fold
on itself. Okay? So suppose, let's say, I have a nice palindrome. You know, I normally think of my single stranded DNA as being a nice sequence here. But things want to bind with each other. If I have a palindrome, it's going to sort of want to fold on itself, okay, and bind with its complement. Okay? So interesting things happen at reverse palindromes. Okay, does that make sense? That just sort of makes sense. Okay? So suppose, let's say, we want to now take a look at a sequence and analyze the, you know, so here, for example, is a picture of a, we'll see that actually later in the semester when we look at the problem of folding. But here is an example of a linear molecule, a DNA or RNA sequence, folding onto itself. Okay, matching reverse pairs. Okay, you see these runs of pairs that are binding. Okay? So a perfectly fine DNA sequencing analysis problem would be, given a DNA sequence, find me the longest palindrome that is contained within it. Okay? That might be a site where something interesting is happening. Okay? Does everybody agree with that? So, question? Here they're not exact palindromes, we say, because there's some bases missing and things like that. Okay? The answer is yes. Okay? In this particular example is a more general structure. But I will argue that finding a palindrome, a long palindrome in a DNA sequence is likely an interesting thing. Okay? So the question now is, if I give you a DNA sequence, how can you find, okay, well, let's say, what the longest reverse palindrome in the sequence is? Any ideas? Okay. Any ideas? Question? Idea? So first of all, what you're really saying is the first thing to do is build a suffix string. Okay? Now, what is a suffix string? You're saying the string, append to it its reverse complement. Okay? And then do some kind of a search. Okay? And that is perfectly reasonable. Okay? So what we can do is basically use the longest common substring algorithm we have, find the, take the input string, append its reverse complement to it as the second string, and then do what we did before. Does that algorithm work to find the longest palindrome in the sequence? Yes. Okay, the answer is it does not work correctly to find the longest subpalindrome. Why is that? You say because it's overlapping. The biggest reason, and I think that's, but what you're saying is basically right. That in the analysis we did so far, this algorithm will find the place on the sequence, the longest string that can be composed of a substring of the original and a reverse complement of something in the original. But we have no guarantee that they coincide, right? Okay, the starting positions do not necessarily match the ending positions. So you're finding a good place for the string to fold on itself if these things are independent or whatever. So they don't have to fold up exactly at a palindrome. Maybe we have maybe they'll form a bigger loop. Okay, or something like that. But the algorithm that we talked about is not strong enough to find the palindrome. Just find a place where you have a string and its reverse complement. Okay? We need another trick to make it find the actual palindrome. Any questions? Is that sort of clear? Okay? To actually find the palindrome, we can use a piece of black magic, which is another sort of black box, which if you study spring algorithms or you read Gus Field's book, okay, you'll learn about. You can add something to the tree So you can answer questions, efficiently answer questions of the form. Given two leaves, find their lowest common ancestor quickly. Okay?
So what do I mean by this? Suppose I give you a tree. And I now give you, I do some processing of this tree, such that I can magically answer questions. I say, here's a leaf, here's a leaf. Tell me what the lowest common ancestor of that those two nodes are. What is the lowest common ancestor? Well, obviously the root is an ancestor of both of them, right? That's the highest common ancestor. It's not very interesting. The lowest common ancestor is the branching point where you separate between those two, right? Does anyone want to give me an algorithm for taking a tree like this and finding the lowest common ancestor? It doesn't have to be that fast, because how would you do it? Okay, any ideas that you could find a lowest common, a common lowest common ancestor, the lowest common ancestor? Okay, yeah? Right, so what you can do is walk over here and say, okay, ancestor, 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 ancestor. And now walk up here saying, you know, have you been marked? No. No. Bingo, you've been marked. You're my ancestor, right? You're the lowest common ancestor. So how much time might that take in a tree with n nodes?
Log
n? Well, no. N. What if your tree happens to look like this? Let's say something like this. Let's say you could end up having to walk up a long way, okay, before actually finding it, okay? So the naive algorithm would take order n time to do it. But using a piece of black magic, which you can read about in Gustav's book, it is an interesting thing. Okay, you can answer such questions in constant time. Okay, once you spend a certain amount of work to build extra information into the tree. Suppose you can answer those questions quickly. Now I want to claim that I can find the longest palindrome efficiently. Why? We built the suffix tree of the string followed by its reverse complement, right? And we want to now know what is the longest palindrome, okay, which is going to be the position I in the string such that the match between I and the reverse complement, starting from the I position in the reverse complement string, such that these are the same thing. So what you really want to know is, for every starting position I, what is the length of the longest match from the I position in here and the I position in the reverse complement? Or what is the least common ancestor between the leaf representing this position and the leaf representing that position? Okay? Any questions? How do you sort of see it? No one. Okay. How do you both see it? Okay, a lot of people. That's good. Let's try another example. Let's look at it again. Suppose, let's say that we built this tree of, let's say we built a tree, and I'm not going to worry about the suffixness of it. But we built a suffix tree of it. Every node is going to be assigned, every leaf corresponds to a starting position in the string, correct? That's what it is. Our string is built of the input string, H, C, T, C, G, 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 and its reverse complement. A substring is a palindrome. Let's say the characters I through J represent a palindrome. What does that mean? That means that the characters I through J in this string
are those to be exactly equal to the characters I through J in its reverse complement.
That's the critical thing. Does everybody see that's the definition of a palindromic sequence?
So if we want to say, is I through J a palindrome? How can we tell once we've got our suffix right? We ask ourselves, find the suffix starting from here, and find, which is a least node in the tree, find the suffix starting from here, which is a least node in the tree. Find the least common ancestor between those two, right? What is that going to be? That's going to be a node in my tree. What is the path up to my least common ancestor? Okay? That's the prefix from this point that is the same. If I want to now know, is there a palindrome from I to J? It's enough to ask, is this node at least J characters deep in the tree? If it is at least J characters deep in the tree, then characters I through J are palindromic. Okay? Any questions about that? I think we'll sort of see that. Okay? So again, you have to assume the existence of this magic black box, which I haven't really talked about, to do this efficiently. But it should be clear if you think about it, that in fact, the least common ancestor of the I-th suffix and the N plus I-th suffix, the length of that map is going to tell me the length of the palindrome starting from the I-th character. Okay? Any questions? Okay?
Okay? So suffix trees are kind of amazing things. Any questions? Do people want to see another amazing suffix tree example or move on to something less obvious? Question, yes. Okay, so what you're trying to say is that to find the longest palindrome, what she's trying to do is avoid the need for suffix trees.
Okay.
And the reason that she has a hope of it working is she's saying the following, that yes, you want to find the longest common substring between these two strings. But she thinks that there's some structure to it, because we're looking for palindromes.
Okay?
What you're saying is you start looking from here, and so you're going to start aligning the reverse complements against it. And whenever you have a mismatch, okay, from the beginning, okay, I don't believe that that is true for the sake of, again, I'm a little foggy standing here, but I don't see why that works for the palindrome, where it doesn't work for the string matching. Okay, the problem is, yes it is, because we know exactly the position type. So that's what I can see, it actually quite likely doesn't, okay? I think I believe you that doesn't, okay? Any questions? Okay? Because that's what we're looking for. That's because we have the magic case that we're not looking for the longest common string, but the longest common match starting from a particular point. Okay? And so it's a simpler problem in some sense. Okay, or a more restricted problem. Any questions? Okay? Very good. Okay? What people in the mood for another example of suffix trees, or should we move on? How many people want to see more suffix trees? A bunch of people. How many people don't want to see more suffix trees? Okay, no one will admit it. Let's look at one other biological problem involving suffix trees that are kind of amazing. Okay?
One thing that's true, we've talked about, remember we've said things that the main principle of biology, as far as I'm concerned, is that nothing is always true in biology. Okay? One thing that we have talked about, that we have assumed is true,
is that DNA molecules are linear molecules. They have a starting point and an ending point. And that happens not to be completely true. There are such things as circular plasmids, okay, little genomes that occur in bacteria and I think organelles, things like mitochondria and other strange things, that have the property that the DNA exists as a closed loop. Okay, it's a circular piece of DNA.
Okay?
And it doesn't have any beginning or an ending. It just is. Okay, it's a loop. Okay? And that's life. We have to deal with this. Now, suppose let's say we wanted to look up. Let's say I give you a I give you a collection of these circular plasmids. I want to know whether I sequence them. I want to now be able to stick them in a database, such that I can know whether I've seen one before. Okay? So the question is there a way I can represent a circular plasmid as a linear sequence by cutting it someplace, such that I know that I always cut it at the same place? So suppose let's say that we have a circular plasmid like whose genome is ATCG. Okay? It goes around on itself. Suppose I want to know whether I've seen it before. I have a lot of these circular plasmids. If I cut it in an arbitrary place to try to do the matching, TTGA, okay, GATT, these are the same things. But if I stick them in a database like that, I'd never know it, right? The question is, can I find a way to cut this plasmid, such that the circular string, such that I always cut it in the same way, okay, that I know I'm cutting it in a canonical way, such that every time it appears, I've got it the same way. Can anyone want to give me a proposed place to cut it that will always give me the shortest, the same answer? Yeah? Right. It's not the first one in positional order because this is a loop. There is no first. But if n plus four places to cut it, each of them will give me a string. Okay? If I took the one that appeared first in sorted order, lexicographic order, that would be unique, right? That is a unique string representation of that cycle. Does everybody sort of agree? That in this case it would be ATTG. It would be the unique way to represent that circular string. Any questions? So what is the problem? The problem is, given a circular string, find the first one that appears is the linearization which appears first in alphabetical order. Does someone want to give me an algorithm for doing this? Maybe a slow one. Okay, yeah. Construct all the strings in n strings of length n, sort them, that could be done by the rating sort in n squared dot, and take the first one. Now, can anyone give me a faster algorithm? Okay, what's the first step of this faster algorithm?
What's the first? Find all the stuff.
First, build the suffix tree. Okay? Now, what do we want to build the suffix tree of? Okay? Well, the following works. It's kind of a cute idea. Suppose I take the string L. I take my string. I break it arbitrarily. I don't know where it is. I'm just going to break it circularly someplace. And I take the string L and construct from that the string L followed by another copy of itself, followed by an N. What is an interesting property of a circular string that I cut randomly and put two copies of itself next to it? Okay. Oddly, that any uncutting, now that I have a string of length 2N, every possible circular linearization of this thing is going to be a string of length n. Okay, it spans this gap. Okay, that's so I now know that I have somehow this string contains all the possible linearizations of it. Okay, and now what do I want? Does everybody sort of agree with that? So what do I now want? The first thing in alphabetical order that is of length at least A in this string. So how do I do it? I build the Suffolk string of this string. I now do a traversal of this Suffolk string. Walking through this string, such that at every branching point, I do an in-order traversal, where I always take the lexicographically smaller character branch before I take the lexicographically bigger branch. So I start walking down the A branch before I walk down the C branch or G branch or D branch. And if I do that traversal, the moment I find myself at the first time that I'm N characters deep in my string, that has to be it. How do people sort of believe that? Okay? More people. Good. Okay? So, again, magically the Suffolk string makes short work of the problem. Any questions? Okay? So Suffolk trees are an amazing data structure for solving all kinds of different string algorithm problems. Okay? And so they're a useful tool to have around. That said, let me show you an even more amazing data structure. Any questions about Suffolk trees? Suffolk trees are amazing. The Suffolk arrays are even more amazing. Okay? And a suffix tree is a suffix array is a simpler reduced data structure that does a lot of what a suffix tree does. Not everything, okay? But it does it with amazing slickness and very little space. What is a suffix array? A suffix array is, I take a string, I will construct all of its suffixes, basically construct the end strings of all its suffixes, and I will sort them in order. So with the string in Mississippi, the first thing in alphabetical order is I, the second one is IPPI, then comes ISSI, IPPI, and so on. This is a sorted table of all its end suffixes of the end character string Mississippi, appearing in order. Okay? Any questions about what a suffix array is? It's an array of suffixes. Okay? Any questions? Suppose I now am giving you a suffix array. Now I want to know whether a substring SIP is a substring of the suffix array. Can anybody give me an algorithm to search a suffix array to ask if a particular string is a substring of the original, of the string it was built on? Yeah? Okay. So basically, what am I going to do? Binary search. I'm looking for SIP. I look at the midpoint of this thing. It's like if you're looking up in a telephone book. Let's say we have a telephone book of the suffixes of Mississippi. We look in the middle of the book, pi. Is SIP greater or less than pi? It is greater than pi, so it's got to be in this half. We look in the middle, is SIP greater than or less than cis? Well, it's less than cis, so it's got to be between pi and cis. Okay? And by doing if I'm looking for a string of length, let's say a substring of length m, and I've got n suffixes, it should be clear that I only have to look at the first n characters of each suffix. I'm going to be doing only log n searches or questions, hey, am I before or after you? Okay? It should be clear that in something in log n times the length of my pattern, I would be able to find it. In fact, by being a little bit more clever and keep track of how many characters it took till I had my rejection, I don't have to look at all the length of my pattern every time before I make a decision. I make a decision of whether it's before or after, okay, based on the first mismatch I get, right? Suppose I was looking for some string that began with S. And I knew that it was now somewhere between here and here.
I know this. My lower bound begins with S. My upper bound begins with S. From now on, I only need to look at the second character, right? And by keeping track of such things, you can actually, instead of making it log n times the length of the pattern, it becomes more like log n plus the length of the pattern.
And we can look it up in the suffix array. Does everybody sort of agree with that? See where the log n comes from? How many times we split it in half? I don't know, our biologists may not be big on logs the way we are, divide and conquer, or splitting it in half. But the log n is how many times do we have n till we get down to one entry. Okay? Any questions?
So searching in a suffix array is another way to look it up, and we don't have to worry about these trees and pointers and all that. What's the problem?
Okay. Yes. The problem is it's going to take quadratic space.
Okay. Why is it going to take quadratic space? Well, I've got n suffixes. Half of them are at least going to have n over 2 characters, n times n squared. N times n over 2 is n squared. But what's the solution, yes? This is the amazing thing. You don't need to store the suffixes. You don't need to store upper and lower bounds like we did before on our suffix string. All we need to store about the string is this. Okay, given the input string and given the positions of each suffix, okay, that is enough information that from here we can look things up in a dictionary. Just given the input string and the numbers corresponding to where is that suffix. How do we do that? Well, where are we going to look up for SIP? You mean the suffix that begins with 10? Well, the 10th position, this is in an array, so we can immediately go to the 10th position. You want to know how does it compare to P? The first character compare to P, and how does the second character compare to P, and the third character compare to I? Amazingly, this index and the input string is all you need to search quickly in that text. Okay? So this uses an amazing amount, a small amount of memory. Any questions about that? How many people sort of see why that is? How many people don't see why that is? Okay? This is amazingly slick. There's very few things I know of that are as slick as this. Okay? That magically giving me this permutation and the input string, I can do substring queries fast. Okay? Now, I can do it in, this is linear space. A suffix tree is also linear space. But I got to store pointers, I've got to store a lot of other things. And if we're trying to build an index on something that's 3 billion characters long, a billion here, a billion there starts to add up. Okay? So suffix arrays let us do this query with basically the input text and basically twice the size of the input text. Okay, 3 times the size of the input text. Okay? Any questions? Okay? It's very interesting to know the person who invented suffix arrays is this guy named Gene Myers. Does anyone remember where we saw Gene Myers' name before? Yeah? He was the third author on the Human Genome paper. Okay? So, you know, somehow that undoubtedly in his sequence assembler, these suffix arrays were lurking. Okay? Because there is an amazingly useful and slick data structure. Any questions? Okay? Good. So how do we build the suffix array? I haven't told you how to build it. In fact, you could build a suffix array in linear time. You don't have to sort these things. Once you have a suffix tree of the data structure, once I build a suffix tree, how can you construct the suffix array? What was it? Just do an in-order traversal of the thing and output the leaf numbers when we see them, right? So once we assume you can build a suffix array,
the suffix tree,
building a suffix array is easy, okay? It gives you a way you can sort of build the suffix tree once, then throw it away and just take the nice small representation afterwards. Any questions? Or you can try to build it in some other way, okay? But that's sort of the slickest way to do it. Any questions? Okay? Very good. So what's the point? We now know a lot of data structures and a lot of algorithms for working with, for taking strings and building these indices that enable us to do pattern matching, right? That's somehow what we just sort of spend a lot of time doing. Exact pattern matching is now something that we can do, okay, repeatedly and fast using these data structures. What I'd like to convince you now is that we can build basically build the entire overlap graph of all the fragments in a sequencing project very, very quickly using a suffix tree, a suffix array idea. So what is the problem now? If you remember, the overlap graph was we had to take as input our set of all reads that we got off of our sequencing machine. Okay? We design each fragment a number, or name, if you wish. Now we want to now build the graph, the set of the relationships, identify which pairs of fragments overlap. There'll be an edge from I to J. If fragment I, a directed edge from I to J, if I is overlaps J by a lot. Okay? A lot, enough that we can then, and we need to have this table of overlaps, this graph of overlaps, to help us determine which fragments to stick together, right? That's why we needed this thing. Okay? What was it? Can someone give me a trivial algorithm for building this graph? You basically said, showed it before. There's n fragments. For every fragment, we compare it against every other fragment. That comparison is going to be of length L, but to find the longest overlap, the best we could do it was basically L squared. In something like n squared L squared time, we can figure out all the overlaps. But what's the problem? N is 26 million in the case of the human genome. And L is 500. Okay? Now, how can we use suffix tree slash arrays to get this down? Yeah? Exactly right. So what is he saying here? Okay? Suppose I build the suffix array of everything. All suffixes of all fragments. How many suffixes will I have by this measure? What? N times L, right? Now what's he saying? If I have a nice juicy overlap between fragments L1 and L2, the suffix beginning here and the suffix beginning here are going to have a large prefix in common, right? What does that mean? That means they're going to be next to each other or very close in sorted order, right? So how can I now go and find all my overlaps, build the suffix array, and walk down it? Whenever I have two fragments, such that one of them represents the end of the suffix, and one of them represents the beginning, okay, in the block of things that share enough of an overlap to be interesting, that's where my edge is. Okay? So I want to say that in sort of linear time, it's a little bit fuzzy because it depends upon how many things share a large enough common prefix to be interesting. But basically, what is my algorithm going to be? Group the suffixes based on whether they have a long enough prefix to be interesting. What does that mean? It means a prefix such that it doesn't occur very often. So each cluster of things, 5 elements, 10 elements, 100 elements, a small number of things. I now ask myself, Are there any two fragments in this category such that one of them represents the end, or any of these two suffixes, one of them the end of a fragment, and one of them the beginning of the fragment? If so, I add the edge to my graph, and if not, I don't. Okay? I want to claim that, basically doing a traversal of size, linear to the size of this array, I can find all the overlaps
using this map. How do you sort of see it? How do you don't see it? Okay, a bunch of people. So let's try an example. Okay?
Suppose we know that we have two fragments in our
thing, there is one overlap.
Let's say for the sake of discussion, let's ignore the repeat problem. Let's say the magical overlap sequences, if they share a run of 50 A's. Okay? Well, what's going to happen when we sort the suffixes here? There's going to be a suffix here of 50 A's followed by an end of string character. There's going to be 50 A's followed by something else, right? For this to be an overlap, that's interesting. Okay, actually, if this is going to overlap this, the A's have to be at the beginning of one of them and at the end of the other, right? So what if I now take my suffix array, my long list of strings, after every string assigned a label, does this pattern appear at the beginning, does this pattern appear at the end, or does this pattern appear in the middle? In the middle, we don't care about it. The only things we care about are the beginnings and the ends. Yeah? With what? Yeah? With everything occurred at the end. Okay, yes. Yeah, so I think, okay, I see what you mean. Okay? So, we're interested basically in matches such that the last set, that one of them ends in a dollar sign for the end of fragment marker. Okay? So we want to now know, we want to know that certain fragments here are going to be labeled as representing the beginning of fragments, end of them. Okay? Some of them are going to represent fragments at the end, that are towards the end. I say that what we want is a fragment with the property, a pair of fragments such that they share a long run in common. One of them represents a beginning, and one represents basically an end. Okay? Meaning an end in the match we hit a dollar sign. We break on a dollar sign. And I'll claim that if the sorting will group the fragments based on similarity, okay? Each group, if you pick a long enough fragment of interest, okay, each group which shares that prefix should be small. Okay? And if it's small, then we can look at all combinations of the elements in that group to see if they have the magic begin-end property that we want. If so, slap that edge in the graph. Okay, yeah. Which fragments do you check?
Yeah, and here you gave an example where the obvious one was A.
Well, so let's say that the magic sequence where they overlap was C, T, T, Q.
I don't know what it is.
You don't know what it is.
What am I looking for?
Well, what you're looking for is a fragment with end of. You want to find fragments. Here's a fragment where there is a common string. If we look at the prefix here, the suffix starting from here and the suffix starting from here, if they overlap, they are identical, right? So we have a sorted table of all suffixes. This is going to appear in the table of all suffixes. This is going to appear in the table of all suffixes. Therefore, in the sorted list, these are going to be next to each other, or very close to each other.
certainly in the block of suffixes, which have the same, the common prefix, right? So basically what we'll do is take a look at our sorted table and partition it into runs of strings such that each run of the block contains the first 20 characters the same. Okay, or 25 characters, or 30, or whatever you want it to be. Okay? Now you've got a small number of fragments here, right? Because a massive size of 30 characters is probably going to be rare. Or 50 characters is going to be rare. Okay? Because we've now partitioned this into pools, such as each number of elements in each pool is small, we can afford to look more carefully at all the fragments of these pools to decide if the overlap is where we want it to be. It's not that expensive now, because now each block is a constant size. Okay? And we can now analyze and say, hey, is there a starting and ending thing in this pool that is interesting? If so, slap the edge of the graph. Any questions about that?
So basically,
this suffix is made up of this fragment. Okay, so in this case, I did not concatenate all my strings and fragments together. I'm just building a sorted array of all suffixes of all fragments. Okay? So we agree that A with an N to it is going to appear in my number of fragments over four times. But that's not very interesting, right? The string ACTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTTT Yeah. Okay, so repeating patterns will appear very often, right? And so maybe if there's some weirdnesses, you're telling me that this is not a random string. I have said that there's weirdnesses in sequences, like repeats, okay? Wouldn't it be the case that the block of things that begin A-T-A-T-A-T is going to be huge, it's going to occur? So if this block is so huge, I don't want to look at it, okay? And I'll ignore those overlaps, okay? And get my overlaps of interest someplace else. So there are a bunch of different tricks I can use, but the important thing is to see, I want to get a lot of, figure out what fragments overlap each other in interesting ways. And the repeats are probably not interesting ways. The common strings are not as interesting ways. They represent duplicates. They're the things I'd like to try. Maybe they're the less interesting things. Okay? Any questions? Yes?
Have you determined whether it's just the beginning of the fragment or
the
end,
just by looking at the length of the suffix? Well, I can do it by looking at the length of the suffix, or by just having an explicit pointer, a field at the end of my suffix that tells me the identity of it, just like I labeled first half, second half in my tree algorithm before. You can do it with adding auxiliary information to help you make that decision. Probably what you want to do is for every fragment to have a pointer, an identifier, so you go back to the read, the fragment that it was taken from. And then you can do all the analysis you want based on that. Okay? Yeah. So in an exact world, the prefix has to be the exact suffix. In the real world, there's sequencing errors, so we're not going to look for such a perfect match. What I really want to know is there a long common sequence? I want to know all pairs of fragments that have a long common sequence, and then do a more careful analysis on those. And if I have a long enough notion of what is interesting, it shouldn't happen so many times spuriously. And then I can spend the time to do the real analysis on those pair of fragments to decide whether I really like it or not. I want to avoid looking at n squared fragments. I'm very happy to look at 10 times n squared, n fragments, or 100 times n fragments, or 1,000 times n fragments. Okay? Any questions? Okay? So using these kind of data structures, we can avoid all the problems and basically build this design that is something like the number of fragments times the length, or linear in the size of the input. Yeah. N is about 26 million, 30 million, something like that. The length of the fragment is 500, 600, something like that. Okay? Yes? Don't really know. Okay? I mean, that, so there's a question of whether or not, there are a couple different questions you might be asking from. One is a question of whether you've got it on the top strand of the DNA sequence or the bottom strand. Okay? One is, I don't know if that's what you're asking. One is, or you know, does 30 million mean both ends of the same fragment? Yeah. Right, so one other problem that we have, may or may not have, is depending upon how we randomly sampled our DNA, when we sampled our fragments, if DNA is a two-stranded molecule, did we always sample from the top strand, or did we randomly sample chunks from both strands? If so, we've got to somehow worry about that when matching. Okay? So that's a technical detail we can do, you know, it doubles our work or something like that. Or maybe the experimentalist was smart enough to always take the top strand. You know, depends upon how they do it. Okay? But basic picture that we want is we can find all the overlaps of interest in time that is proportional to the square of the linear in the size of the input, the number of input characters in the fragment. You can't hope to do it any faster. Okay, and that's fast enough that it gets a tractable computation. Any questions? Huh? Any questions? So basically by doing clever data structures, we can build this overlap graph in a reasonable amount of time. Any questions? Okay? Very good. So now we have our overlap graph. There's still several jobs that we have left to do in order to actually build an finish up our assembler. One example, I mean, I think I showed you the pipeline. Actually, let me go take a look again. In a previous lecture, I showed you sort of a cartoon of the pipeline that is involved in assembly. What are the basic steps that you need to do? Building the overlap graph is one of them. Basically, now that we have the overlap graph, the question is you want to reconstruct the order from left to right of the fragments. And you want to actually call the bases. Okay, so there are a couple of different issues here that come to mind. One problem is, suppose I have ordered the fragments now. I have regions where there are several fragments that overlap. There's going to be sequencing errors. So one thing I've got to do is to vote based on the number of fragments that overlap in a position. Do I call this an A or a C or a G? Well, this position I had two C's, a G and an A. I will call that a C, probably just because of my voting. But it's a problem trying to figure out. I can read the sequence once you have the overlap of the fragments in a world of error. But more interesting, I can determine the order of these segments. That should, at least conceptually, finding out how to go even fast in this graph. That sounds like trouble, because how to go even fast are envy complete. But if you build this graph properly, okay, it will hopefully have very few edges that are not corresponding to real fragments. Okay, but so now trying to figure out the order of the fragments is the heart of the assembly problem that still remains. Okay?
So somehow that's the kind of thing that we're going to have to answer, help answer. Well, what other kind of problems are there in making our assembler more robust? Okay, what other kind of problems arise in assembly? Okay, I'm now getting trapped in my having too many slides on the table, so I'm not completely sure I know where my slide is. Let me just try one more time. Okay. So what other kind of problems arise in assembly?
Some of it did. Here.
Okay. So there are a couple of different problems that come up. One problem that comes up, some problems that come up are chemical. We agree that there are sequencing errors. There are certain nasty kinds of technology problems that come up.
One of them is certain fragments, the act of sequencing a fragment. Sometimes things go bad. And occasionally you get fragments that are called chimeras. A chimera is a fragment that is really two half fragments from different points on the genome that are stuck together. Okay, so now there's this process we have to do of taking this, the genome, randomly cutting it into pieces, and then sequencing each of the pieces, right? Occasionally this problem of constructing random pieces ends up producing something where basically the composition of fragments that are not next to each other. So the sequence that you get is 100 bases from here and 400 bases from there. Are such fragments bad for assembly? Yes, they are bad for assembly. Okay? Because if you believe them, they tell you basically that you can't assemble them. Right? So one of the things you've got to do is to identify the fragments, the bad reads, the fragments that don't really exist. Okay? And in a typical sequencing project, there are, I don't know, let's say 1% of your fragments are chimeras. That's not a lot, but it's enough to screw you up seriously into believing something. But this is a great overlap here. You know, now you've got that this is going to, that you've really got a nice junction, if you wish. There are false overlaps get created by these chimeras. So you've got to try to identify them. You've got to compensate for sequencing errors. You've got to worry about duplicates or repetitions in the sequence. We agreed that repetitions were going to be trouble. Why were repetitions going to be trouble? Well, repeated sequences, okay, that occur a lot of places, it's very, very easy to disassemble them at the edges of them. Okay? So there are a lot of technology-dependent things that we have to still worry about to build a good assembler. Okay, although you wish the hardest CS type things.
Okay. Other than the fact that you have some serious software engineering and being clever, the hardest algorithmic things are probably already what we've talked about. Okay, but you have these other things to worry about as well. Any questions? Question.
How would you say the length of interest? Basically, if it's a small one, you'll get lots of them, and when you overlap, lots of overlaps.
So the question is, what is the right length of interest to call an overlap? And you've basically hit the problem on the head. Too short a length of overlap has the problem you get a lot of false hits. Too long an overlap means you miss things, especially in a world of sequencing error. Well, you do your best, okay? And once you do your homework assignment, you get some idea as to how rare you would expect it to be that a sequence will occur once. Okay? So let's say you know that the expected number of times a sequence should occur of length k is once. Anything that occurs more than 2k, of anything of length 2k that occurs more often is probably very interesting. So that's sort of a certain amount of ad hocery to try to figure out what the right point is there to maximize the chances you get a match while not being overwhelmed by false matches. Okay? Any other questions? Okay. One thing,
just as a quick thing, which I'll splash up again later, but I wanted to show you, because I carried this around. Here's a slide of actually, remember in the old days when people did sequencing before sequencing machines, it was done by graduate students. Okay? And graduate students, you used to walk around labs and you'd see these graduate students carrying these big plates of Jell-O. Okay, trying and running their gels and looking at them. This is an example of a sequencing gel that was produced in the old days.
Okay.
But may give you a better idea about what actually process happens in these reads.
Look at this gel for a second. First of all, notice that it exists as sets of four columns, because remember the way the sequencing reaction worked was there was an a column for A, C, G's, and D's, and we get a band whenever there was a fragment ending in that. So basically, this is what is happening inside a sequencing machine. Now they don't use Jell-O, now each one of these lanes is really a sort of a little capillary. But in this capillary is Jell-O, and fragments are migrating through that by electrophoresis. Look at how clean or dirty the bands actually are. Okay, maybe it may or may not be easy for you to see this. But look at some of the artifacts that occur on the bands. Okay? If you look at it, you'll agree that over here, the bands are very, very close together, and here they're wider apart, right? This tells me that it's harder. I mean, I don't know which end is the short fragments or the long fragments. But this means that it's harder to distinguish whether you've got a band in one place or another. Okay? So at the beginning of sequences, and also at the end of the sequences, you tend to get more noise. Is that sort of clear? Here the bands are so close together you can't see them. Here they get kind of weak. They get so far apart that you don't know if there's a real gap there or not. So the beginning and ends of reads are suspicious. Notice also that strange things happen in this Jell-O. Look at this lane over here. There's wavy bands here. Okay? You know, sometimes the Jell-O is thicker in one place than another place. Okay? And so trying to look at one of these things and read exact precisely, is there a base or is there not a base? This is not a trivial problem. Okay? We can't sort of demand that they give us perfect data, because as you can see, these are the kind of artifacts that come in. So writing a program that reads these gels, something like this program called FRED, is not a trivial matter. Okay, it's kind of an interesting problem in itself. Okay, but ultimately there are these kind of artifacts that you have to dislodge with the assembly problem. Any questions? Okay, very good. Okay, so any other questions? Okay, thanks a lot. We'll see you next class. And we'll talk, maybe we'll talk a tiny bit more about assembly and then get into string mapping. Okay, thank you very much.